is Friday, March 29th. I'm Scott Seidenberg.
And I'm AJ Hoffman.
First half of the Elite Eight is set.
And the rest set today.
Here comes the Vegas Truth.
This is Straight Out of Vegas.
We are Straight Out of Vegas AM, your daily destination for sports conversation with a Vegas lean. Here's what you need to know to start your day.
Four teams through to the Elite Eight, four more to come.
An exciting opening day in Major League Baseball with more teams opening up today.
And we're going to talk some fights. We've got a big boxing pay-per-view coming up this week. Got some sound from Radio Row here in Las Vegas today. What is the Vegas lead here, Scott?
NCAA tournament action from last night, AJ. Let's begin with the 2-6 matchup in the West region, where Clemson, the sixth seed, upsets Arizona 77-72.
I don't know how Clemson is doing this. I don't understand the voodoo magic. I have seen enough of these Clemson games, and there's people who have asked me about it on social media, like, are they just getting lucky? Like, what's happening here? How is this continuing to work?
Well, Arizona can't make a three-pointer.
No one can make a three-pointer. I mean, this is
5 of 28.
It's insane. And it's not, I mean, I talked about Clemson opponents now are shooting 18% from three in this tournament.
Are they defending the three better, or are they just saying, here, take it,
not.
You're missing it?
There are open shots being missed. And over the course of the season, where now Clemson, before this tournament started, they played 32 games. They allowed 33% from three. Like, this is not like some really good, they're a below average three-point defense, at least for power conference teams. They're a below average three-point defense. In fact, they typically allow the highest percentage of points. Like there's point distribution, which gets divvied up between how many points you give up via three, two, or free throws. 33.3% of their points on the season come from the three-point line. No one can make a three. No one can make a three in this tournament against them. I don't know if it's going to continue that way, but it's incredible. It's going to be tested again as we go further into this tournament. I don't know if I believe it, but I have grown tired of Clemson proving me wrong, which is why I stayed off this game. I faded them in New Mexico game. New Mexico couldn't hit a three. I faded them in the Baylor game. Baylor couldn't hit a three. I said, enough. Arizona's going to have to, they're going to have to do it, and they couldn't. Arizona could not get the job done.
Yeah, and especially Caleb Love. I mentioned.
Oh, I said, and this is why I said, I don't want to see what happens when Caleb Love's in charge of the game at the end. And I was right. Like, that's the best handicap I could have given for why I didn't play a game, is I don't want the Caleb Love show to decide my bet.
0 of 9 from 3.
Oh, disgusting.
Well, he has something in common with his former North Carolina teammate, as RJ Davis goes 0 of 9 from 3-point range. Alabama, the 4 seed in the West, upsets the 1 seed North Carolina 89-87. North Carolina scored 54 points in the first half. They had a 54-46 lead in the first half. They are outscored by 10 in the second half, 43-33. And a disappointing end for that game for me, as I had the over 88.5 for North Carolina team total. Armando Bacot does go over his 15.5 points. He had 19, but Alabama steals a victory from defeat. I thought North Carolina had this game at hand, AJ. They had a lead in the closing minutes of this game. So they allowed Alabama to go on a run, but then they took the lead back. And I felt really good, not just about the win for North Carolina, but I felt good that they were going to exceed their point total, right? So they were up 85-84 with, let's see, there was a minute minute 20 left. They're up 85-84 after Mark Sears from Alabama makes a layup. They run probably the worst offensive possession of the game, where Jalen Withers, I understand he's open at the top of the key, but son,
run some clock.
No, get a better look. You're not a three-point shooter.
That's true.
Jalen Withers, if pull up Jalen Withers' stats this year. I know this was his only three of the game, right? He was 0 for 1 from three-point range for this game. But Jalen Withers shoots a three from the top of the key and misses it. And then...
You're going to hate it when I say his three-point percentage for the season.
What was it, 10?
4 for 20. 20% on the season.
4 for 20 on the entire season. Son.
That's when you decide to do it?
That's when you decide to take a three? Like, I understand that they doubled R.J. Davis. But Jalen Withers... What are you doing shooting that three-pointer there? That is a terrible shot from a non-three-point shooter. It bricks off the rim. Alabama gets the rebound. They drive down, get a layup. Oh, he fouled on that next play, too, because he was upset that he missed a free throw. So Nelson not only made the layup, got the and one, and now with 39 seconds left, Alabama is up 87-85.
7-0 run at a time where they just couldn't afford to let it happen, and that was the difference in the game. And it put, especially like you're saying, for the team total, that you want to lead at that point. You want to be the one getting free throws.
I want them to work. The layup from Alabama was with 1:21, right? Shot clock's 30 seconds. They got to shoot the ball with under a minute left. And it's got to be something better than that three-pointer right there. Get fouled. Get to the line. Any basket on that possession. Now, look, if he makes that three and they have 88.
We win everything.
We win everything, right? They probably win the game outright. But
that's not a high percentage shot.
Yeah, it's not a high percentage shot from a guy that doesn't shoot threes.
No, it's a bad decision. And, you know, I'm sure, listen, North Carolina's going to have a lot to look back at. And
yeah, I mean, R.J. Davis was 0 for 9. Not only was R.J. Davis 0 of 9 from three-point range, but he went 4 for 20 from the field. You mentioned Withers 4 of 20 on the season in three-point range.
Yeah.
R.J. Davis made 4 baskets the entire game.
Well, let's say this. The final score, Alabama 89, North Carolina 87. I mean, what was traveling all over Twitter last night? Armando Bacot missing a wide-open dunk.
Wide-open dunk. I mean, wide-open dunk with about 6 minutes left, I think it was.
Yeah, so you add those 2 points, it's 89-89.
Yep.
You win the team total over.
Yep.
And you're at least going to overtime, mm-hmm. and it's just a different game. But it's like there's going to be a bunch
Carolina,
of things.
North Carolina went 0-11 to start the second half.
Gross. That was gross.
They scored, because I tweeted this out last night, so not only did they go 0 of 11, like I said, they scored 54 points in the first half. They went 0 of 11 from the field to start the second half. They scored just 7 points in the first 10 minutes of the second half.
That is brutal.
In the final, because what they finished, 33 and a half?
Yeah.
So think about that. They scored just 7 in the first 10 minutes, and they missed their team total by 1 basket.
Yep.
By 1 basket. I felt like it was such a good handicap for such a bad loss.
It is a painful one to stomach, no doubt. And listen, and this is the way it works. Yesterday I had an awesome day. I went 4-1 on my college basketball bets, 1-0 in baseball, mind you. Mm-hmm. Not to get on your level, but 4-1 on college hoops. The one loss is the one I'm looking at like, how did I possibly lose that?
Same thing for me, too. I mean, we both put in the same game parlay last night with Illinois. Yeah. We'll get to Illinois in just a moment, but we cashed that. The three-leg Illinois same game parlay cashed. We cashed the Baycott points. We just missed this North Carolina team total, which is why it's so frustrating, because it could have been such a really great night.
Oh, it could have been such a massive night.
Especially if you parlayed it like I did.
Yeah, I was happier than you last night.
Sure, sure. By the way, R.J. Davis and Caleb Love both going 0 of 18 from three-point range. It's the first time they went both went 0 of 9, so combined 0 of 18. First time in tourney history two players shot 0 for 9 or worse from three in the same day.
It's Spider-Man meme, right? It's me. You're me. Yeah, I'm you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's what it was last night.
Yep.
Imagine if they were on the same team. North Carolina would still be...
win a national championship? Yeah. Let's talk about...
And remember, they didn't make the tournament last year.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Illinois game. And by the way, if you're saying, oh, you glossed over the UConn game, they won by 30.
Yeah, there's not much to say.
There's not much to say. It went exactly how we thought it was going to go. When we did the Dream Pod, we said under San Diego State, 62.5. They scored 52 points. UConn wins 82-52.
Yeah,
nothing more to say.
Everything. Scott and RJ had team total under San Diego State. I had UConn first half.
Yep.
Fez had UConn full game. Everybody cashed easy. Everybody was happy in that.
Nothing more to say about that game except I make this reference a lot. So if you're new to the podcast, you'll hear me make this reference probably four times throughout the year, maybe more than that. It's the scene from Billy Madison where they're in the academic decathlon, and it's the music part, and Eric is playing the violin, and it's all beautiful. And then Billy takes out his flute, and he goes, and then he stops, and he goes, he's good.
He's good.
That's all you got to say about UConn. It's they're good.
But I will say this. I don't know what I don't think UConn's going to look like they looked last night against Illinois.
We'll preview the Elite Eight in just a moment. Let's talk about Illinois. 72-69 winners over Iowa State. We cashed the three-leg parlay, which is over Terrence Shannon Jr., 21.5 points. He finished with 29. We had over Damask, 4.5 assists. He cashes that finishing with, what do you have, five assists.
Just
barely cashed that. And then Illinois money line did come home. So plus 375, plus 400, a little over plus 400, depending on which book you put it in at. We also gave you an option for an alternate same game parlay on DraftKings, which was like going like above Damask. We went like, what, over 6.5 or something like that?
Yeah,
that was a 10-to-1 payout. So most books you didn't have to do that on.
Yeah.
So the regular straight same game parlay did hit. Illinois is good, man. I mean, Terrence Shannon Jr. is the best player on the floor. And this is a team that I know you have them in your Final Four.
I do.
And part of that is, I don't know how much of that for you was your true belief in this team, or was it just you playing a little bit of variance because figuring everyone's going to pick UConn? But I think Illinois is a live dog against UConn.
I think they're 100% a live dog. And the fact that this thing opened at 9.5 is offensive. If you've seen this Illinois team play for the last, I don't know, month, going back to February 24th, this team is 10-1. The one loss was to Purdue. And I'll tell you now, it wasn't by double-digit points. So to see a 9.5 posted was wild to me. I'm with you. I think this is a very, very live Illinois team. The reason why I had them in, I didn't think Connecticut was going to be in the tournament anymore. I like you, thought Auburn was going to do some damage.
But
I do think that Illinois is one of the few teams that is as talented as this UConn team. And as someone who would prefer not to see UConn win the national championship, at least for bracket purposes, I believe that Illinois gives them a chance that Iowa State would not have had, because Iowa State was never going to be able to score enough to win that game. And we talked about Iowa State, and they were 3-6 going into this game when their opponent scored 70 points. Well, they're now 3-7. Illinois scored 72 points. They've still only failed to score 70 three times all season, and they got the job done. And the final score looks closer than the game was. Illinois was in full control of this game for a good majority of it. They were the better team. This was not a fluke.
Yep, not a fluke at all. And you mentioned the spreads when it comes to the Elite Eight games. So 9.5 is what this thing opened at, the game on Saturday between UConn and Illinois. And then Clemson, so we like Illinois plus the points.
Absolutely.
There. Yeah, that's a little bit of a disrespectful line there for Illinois. It's now down to 8.5, by the way. So
yeah,
people have jumped on it early on. Alabama opens up as a 3-point favorite over Clemson. So, you know, if I can buy the hook here and get Clemson north of a field goal, I think they can keep it close here. I know Alabama's got a strong run game, but
remember, they played 3 national championships in 4 years, guys.
Exactly.
These are familiar foes.
It's just funny that it's funny that the spread is 3, though. You know? Like,
it's a field goal, obviously.
It's very fitting that a Clemson-Alabama matchup is a field goal spread in basketball.
Yeah. Well, first of all, my thoughts are this is look at Alabama's totals so far in this tournament. We mentioned the spread. This is a 164 and a half point total, which this is the first time in this tournament that it's been sub 170 for an Alabama game. And we just saw Alabama go over 173 and a half, which was what the highest in how many years since, I mean, it's been forever. Yeah. So, my first thought was, boy, the it opened at 167. It's been bet down. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I want to be a part of that. And the thought would be that, you know, Clemson is a better – I mean, they're a good defensive team. They're not a great offensive team. But, I mean, this Alabama defense, it's not like they did something special last night to slow down North Carolina. Like, North Carolina missed a bunch of shots. You mentioned R.J. Davis just had one of the worst nights of his career. Armando Bacot, even though we talked about it, we cashed the over on his total points. A lot of it came from the free throw line.
Yeah.
He was off from the field as well.
There was one possession where he, like, got a rebound, missed the putback, got his own rebound, missed the putback.
Yeah.
You know, like, just, you got to cash in those points.
You have to.
And it's disappointing that, I mean, I'm not going to get over this loss for a while.
But I don't know when this Clemson ride will end of their opponents just missing every three-pointer that they take. And especially when you see what R.J. Davis did last night, it's hard to say, well, North Carolina's not going to shoot like that, because they absolutely can. But it just goes, it goes back to what I've said all season long, or all tournament long, about this Clemson team. I just think that they are playing better than what they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how this game doesn't go over. I'm going to let this keep getting pushed down. I know when you get deep into tournaments, you tend to see a little bit lower scoring games, but we haven't seen it yet with this Alabama team. I guess we saw it in the round of 32, mm-hmm. but this Sweet 16 game didn't look like anybody was taking off the gas. So I think I'm gonna wait and see where it goes. But the initial move down makes me want to grab a little bit of the over.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way as well. Let's take a look at the schedule for tonight. We have the South Region, the number 2 seed Marquette, a 6.5 point favorite over the 11 seed NC State.
Like with Clemson, I'm just not a believer in the middle of the ACC, and really, I'm not really a believer in the ACC.
But
in
does
general.
Does Clemson's performance like make you reconsider the ACC?
Well, I don't know. No, it doesn't. I mean, and especially not this NC State team. I mean, this is a team that, until the tournament, they weren't competitive with anybody good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they built up a bunch of wins against bad teams. So no, I'm not buying in. They made a magical run through the ACC tournament, but I think Marquette's got too many ways to beat them. I think DJ Burns is very good. I'm not like trying to downplay what he is. I think he's going to have a hard time keeping up with Oso Igodoro and Tyler Kolek in that pick and roll. The most elite pick and roll offense, I think, in the country. I just think it's going to be – they're a little too quick for DJ to keep up. And I'm not saying he's, you know, some kind of slob. Mm-hmm. He's very quick for his build. But I think that this Marquette offense is too strong.
What do you think about DJ Burns over 14.5 points?
Pass? Yeah.
I don't think that NC State tries to slow the game down and work through him?
I think the whole game is tried to slow down. But I think when you're talking about a game where I think there could be under 150 points,
okay,
I don't want to count on any one guy to get a 10% of those points.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. Let's move on to the next matchup, and that's going to be in the Midwest region, the 1-5 matchup, Purdue, 5.5 point favorites over Gonzaga.
I think that this Gonzaga team is live here, and I know it's hard to bet against Purdue because they just look like an absolute monster.
Yeah.
It looks like they're impossible to stop. You know, they've had two games, Grambling State and Utah State, where, I mean, you could tell by halftime these teams didn't belong on the floor with them. But remember, at halftime in the first Gonzaga-Purdue matchup, Gonzaga had a lead. And they sort of faded, and Gonzaga's made some changes to their lineup since then. Like, this was like they made some switches, and Gonzaga's gotten better as the season gone on. I don't think there's any denying that.
you talk about, or I was talking about teams that have played well down the stretch and are maybe being a little overlooked right now. I mean, I would have to say that 11 out of 12, the 11 out of the last 12 for Gonzaga means, yeah, they're playing pretty good ball right now. Mm-hmm. 16 of the last 18, yeah, they're playing pretty good ball right now. I just think that, you know, this is a coach who is good enough to find a way to limit Zach Edey. I don't know if I want the full game because I worry about foul trouble. I mean, Gonzaga, they have no depth, mm-hmm. none. But I'm gonna take a stab with Gonzaga in the first half here and assume that Mark Few comes out with a good game plan, limits Edey early, and
plus three.
Hopefully doesn't chew up too many fouls in the first half, and then we've got a close game at the end. But yeah, I prefer Gonzaga plus three in the first half to the full game.
What about the Purdue under 37.5 first half?
I don't want to play any team total okay. under okay. because I don't know what Gonzaga's plan is going to be. Gonzaga is typically and Gonzaga being a transition team, and we've seen some games. A lot of the games where Purdue has lost, their young guards have turnover issues.
Okay.
You turn it over against Gonzaga, they're going
to
get.
You know what happens is because they're trying to get the ball into Edey, and when that ball's denied, it gets tipped around, then it turns into a turnover.
Yes.
And transition points for the other team. It's like they can be lazy with the ball when they're standing at the top of the key and Edey is putting himself in position and all they're trying to do is loft it over the defense and try to give it to the big man.
No doubt.
And all it takes is an athletic defender to just tip the ball in the air.
Graham Ike, pretty good athlete too, by the way.
Graham Ike, very good athlete. So, all right, I like kind of like Gonzaga plus three in the first half. Let me ask you about a player prop. What about Zach Edey, 12.5 rebounds? He's gone over in both games this tournament.
Well, yeah, that's probably a good one, and especially because – you know, I mentioned Gonzaga. They want to run in transition, mm-hmm. which means there's opportunities for extra rebounds. Like when you're going for steals or things like that, you could see Purdue getting some extra offensive rebounds. So yeah, I'd see over 12.5 as a solid prop. I don't know, I'll be on it, but I could see it certainly. Okay. You know what I'd love to see is Zach Edey get into some foul trouble. I mean, like most of these games, a whistle is going to have a lot to do with it.
Yeah,
we'll talk about the Houston game in a minute, where I think the whistle is basically the deciding factor of the game.
Okay, but so tell me about that. We got the 1-4 matchup in the South region. Houston, a 4.5-point favorite, down to 4 in some spots over Duke. You think because the game's in Dallas, it's a favorable whistle?
I think it's got to be more favorable than it was in Memphis. But if it's not favorable, then Houston's got problems, you know, because they are going to be physical with this Duke team. And Duke, one thing they do well is flop. Like, they will flop around like mad and get those calls. If they're getting the benefit of the doubt there, and Houston finds himself in the same kind of foul trouble they did against A&M.
Everybody got fouled out of the game.
Four starters fouled out. And they won the game. I think it's the first time since 1987 that's happened in the tournament. If the whistles are like that against Duke, I think that Duke has enough offensive firepower that they're going to win the game. And they're likely to make their free throws that Texas A&M just didn't. But if the whistle is not as soft, if they do let them bang a little bit, which, you know, this time of the tournament, they generally want to let them play a little bit more. Nobody wants a boring free throw contest in a Sweet 16. I think that Houston's got a real edge here. I still like the Cougars to win the national championship. I still think that they are just such a difficult matchup for almost everybody, and probably the team that is the best matchup for them, Iowa State, just got knocked out of the tournament. I guess UConn's a pretty tough matchup for anybody. But, yeah, give me the Cougs here, and I'll just hope that the whistles stay quiet.
All right, let's go to the final game of the night, and that's going to be back in Detroit in the Midwest region, the 2-3 matchup, Tennessee, 2.5-point favorites over Creighton, and I think this is your best bet.
Yeah, it was my best bet from the pod was Tennessee. I like Tennessee here. I think they're going to get some good outside shooting. What we saw in their last game was the game that's knocked them out of the tournament almost every year that under Rick Barnes. And it was the game where they cannot make a shot to save their lives. 3 of 25 from three. 12% is what that adds up to if you're a math guy. And they still found a way to win. Dalton Knecht, one of eight from three. Zakai Ziegler, one of eight from three. These guys aren't going to do that again. Dalton Connect is not going to have two games like that in a row. He's too solid. You're talking about a 40% three-point shooter. Zakai Ziegler, a 35% three-point shooter. They are not going to do that in back-to-back games. And against a Creighton team that has soft perimeter defense, Creighton, excellent interior defense, thanks to my boy, Big Caulk, but they can be beat from outside.
Yeah.
And Tennessee, I think, is going to – they're going to get a little bit better shooting than they got in their last game there at Little Caesars Arena. I think we'll see a good shooting night for them. And, yeah, I think that UConn has a hard time keeping up when Tennessee's in full force because Tennessee's just as good – I mean, they're better on the defensive end than they are offense. But with Dalton Connect scoring the way that he can – that makes his team extra dangerous. I'll just go ahead and throw it out now. A player prop. I like Dalton Connect over 2.5 threes. Dalton Connect, he's a big believer in, hey, I'm going to make the next one. I'm going to make the next one. Let me read you his last few game logs for attempts. 8, 4, 9, 15, 11, 7, 8, 9. That's the last eight games. If I can get an average of that, let's just say 8, 9 is the average. I need him to make three of those. I like my chances. And against this Creighton team, I think he may take more than his standard amount of shot attempts from out there.
All right, so I'm going to give you a same-game parlay, just like we did on yesterday's show for last night's victory. Here is your same-game parlay for Creighton against Tennessee. Leg number one, Tennessee -3.
Okay.
Leg number two, Dalton Connect over 2.5 three-pointers.
I love that.
Leg number three, Zakai Ziegler over 5.5 assists. He had 7 in the game against Texas. He had 10 in the game against St. Peter's. He had 2 against Mississippi State in the SEC tournament. But before that, 9 against Kentucky, yeah. 7 against South Carolina. He leads the team averaging 6 per game. And if we think Connect's going to, you know, shoot the three, hey, a couple of passes from Ziegler, we get Connect three-pointers.
Yeah, you're probably right. The only thing I don't like about that is that you're having to lay a full three with Tennessee.
That's the line now on DraftKings.
But there's still 2.5s out there, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to play a parlay where I'm not
getting. So I'll give you the alternate.
Especially
here
on a key number.
Okay, I'll go the alternate. I'll go 2.5 for you. Let's see what that pays out.
Here's what I would say. Instead of doing an alternate, I would say try and play that at a different book where you can get 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just shop around for the best numbers, especially when you're around 2.5, 3, 3.5, 4. These are such key numbers in college hoops, yep, that I don't want to give an edge. And I want -110, and I don't want to.
So we're hovering around pretty much the same payout as last night. If we do the 2.5, it's at +345. If we do the full three, we're at +370. So right around there, that's a pretty good same game parlay. Again, Tennessee, we like them to win and cover. We like Dalton Connect over 2.5 threes, and I'm pushing the Zakai Ziegler over 5.5 assists. Same game parlay for tonight's Creighton-Tennessee matchup. What an opening day, or I should say opening evening, we had in Major League Baseball yesterday. Yes, a couple of day games got pushed to today, so we'll talk about those in just a moment. But yesterday, the Orioles, an 11-3 rout of the Angels. If you had the no-run first inning, you were a loser. Mike Trout hit a solo home run in the top of the first inning. That was the only hit and run that Corbin Burnes allowed in his Orioles debut. 6 innings of 1 run, 1 hit ball, 11 strikeouts.
Wow.
0 walks. You want to talk about a guy that was locked in? Corbin Burnes, absolutely dominant in his Orioles debut. Also dominant, Tarik Skubal of the Tigers. This was my best bet of the day. Tigers in the first 5. Detroit with a 1-0 lead after 5. Detroit with a 1-0 lead to end the game. Skubal finished with 6 shutout innings, striking out 6, 0 walks, with just 3 hits allowed.
He's good.
Twins beat the Royals 4-1. It was the Yankees in come-from-behind fashion, beating the Astros 5-4. Juan Soto saving the game with a laser throw from right field to throw a runner out at the plate in the bottom of the 9th. Yankees win 5-4. In 12 innings, as much as they tried to give the game away, the Pirates beat the Marlins 6-5.
Never in doubt.
never in doubt. This is another one of my plays. I had the Pirates as an underdog here, and I was texting you, AJ, during the game. They had a runner thrown out at home plate in both the 10th and 11th innings before finally getting a run in the 12th. Because, you know, the ghost runner, you're like, oh, they're easily going to score a run. Nope, not the case. Padres beat the Giants 6-4, but thanks to a Michael Conforto home run, we cashed the over Giants 3.5 team total. So if you're keeping score, it's a 3-0 sweep.
Congratulations, yeah.
Sometimes you got to get lucky, but hey, we'll take it.
I went 1-0. I mean, I don't like to brag. 1-0 is undefeated, though.
Undefeated, never lost. Exactly.
Never lost.
Dodgers rout the Cardinals 7-1. Tyler Glasnow gets his first victory. Dodgers are good. Dodgers run line's going to be a good bet a lot of times this season. Blue Jays an 8-2 win over the Rays. The Reds beat the Nationals 8-2 in 10 innings. The Rangers a 4-3 win over the Cubs. Guardians blanked the A's 8-0. Shane, that was your play?
That was my play, first five.
Shane Bieber, 6 innings, shutout ball, 4 hits allowed, 1 walk. He struck out 11. What a performance from Bieber. Red Sox beat the Mariners 6-4 and the Diamondbacks 16-1 rout over the Rockies. Arizona, first let me give props to my boy Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen, who threw 5 innings of 3 hit, 1 run ball, just 3 strikeouts, 2 walks, but was staked to a massive lead after the Diamondbacks scored 14 runs in the 3rd inning. They set the record for the most hits, runs, and batters in a single inning in franchise history, and set the record for the most runs in an inning on opening day. It took 34 minutes before the Rockies can get 3 outs from the Diamondbacks in the 3rd inning.
Not ideal. Not an ideal start to the season.
18 batters came to the plate, 13 hits, 2 walks, 1 sacrifice fly, and 3 pitchers from the other team. And what's crazy, the 14 runs, no home runs.
So the Rockies are basically Billy Madison trying to play the recorder.
No, the Rockies are like... The Rockies are the little kids that he plays dodgeball against.
You know? Now you're all yes. In big trouble.
Absolutely. The 2 games that did get rained out or postponed, if you will, Brewers and Mets, Braves and Phillies, they will begin the slate for today as they open up their season. Brewers at the Mets. It's an even split both ways, -110, with Jose Quintana on the mound for the Mets, Freddy Peralta going for the Brew Crew. The Braves are at the Phillies. Atlanta, a -130 favorite with Spencer Strider on the mound. Zach Wheeler goes for Philadelphia. The Blue Jays are at the Rays. Chris Bassett for Toronto. Aaron Civale for Tampa. This one's Tampa -120. Pirates at the Marlins. AJ Puck for the Marlins, or Puke, depends how you pronounce it. Martin Perez goes for the Pirates. This is Marlins -130. Yankees at the Astros. Carlos Rodon for New York. Christian Javier for Houston. Astros -135. Rockies at the Diamondbacks. Merrill Kelly for Arizona. Cal Quantrill for Colorado. Arizona -230. Giants at the Padres. Joe Musgrove for San Diego. Kyle Harrison for San Francisco. San Diego -155. Red Sox at the Mariners. George Kirby on the mound for Seattle. They are -162 favorites. Nick Pivetta goes for Boston. Logan Allen gets a start for Cleveland. Ross Stripling goes for the A's. Guardians -142. And the Dodgers with Bobby Miller on the mound, -238 favorites at home against Zach Thompson and the Cardinals. Notable starts this weekend. Yamamoto will make his second start for the Dodgers tomorrow against Lance Lynn and the Cardinals. Yamamoto with an 0-1 record and a 45.00 ERA.
I'm guessing it improves tomorrow.
Yes. Dylan Cease will make his Padres debut tomorrow against Jordan Hicks and the Giants. So you want to see how Cease does for the Padres. That's your pitching matchups, just notable pitching matchups as we look ahead to the schedule for the weekend. And then Chris Sale makes his Braves debut on Sunday against Ranger Suarez and the Phillies. And Sunday Night Baseball is the Dodgers against the Cardinals. So that will wrap up the first weekend of Major League Baseball. NBA, just 2 games last night. The Hawks in overtime defeated the Celtics 123-122. DeJounte Murray with 44 points, 7 boards, 7 dimes. Jason Tatum, 31 points and 13 boards in the loss. Pelicans upset the Bucks 107-100. CJ McCollum with 25 points. Giannis had 35 in the loss. Here's your schedule for tonight. Warriors are at the Hornets. Golden State laying 12.5. Lakers at the Pacers. Indy 3.5-point favorites. Clippers at the Magic. LA 1.5-point favorites. Pistons at the Wizards. Washington laying 4.5. The Bulls at the Nets. Chicago 5.5-point favorites. Sixers at the Cavs. Cleveland laying 8.5. Blazers at the Heat. Miami 14.5-point favorites. Suns at the Thunder. Phoenix laying 2.5 on the road. Do we like OKC as home dogs?
I think so. I think that's the only side I would be looking to play.
Knicks are 9.5-point favorites at the Spurs. Timberwolves at the Nuggets. Denver laying 6.5. The Rockets are at the Jazz. Houston laying 7.5 as they look to continue their winning streak.
I'm not betting against them, I can tell you that. They are just an inferno.
And the Mavericks are at the Kings. Sacramento 1.5-point favorites. Hockey last night, a potential Stanley Cup final preview goes to the New York Rangers as they improve the league's best record with a 3-2 shootout win over the Avalanche. Notable in this game, Nathan MacKinnon's 35 home game point streak came to a close.
What a loser.
35 straight home games with a point, and that ends. It's the second longest home point streak in NHL history behind Wayne Gretzky, who set the mark at 40 straight home games. So that is a bummer there for MacKinnon. He had 5 more to go to tie the great one, but the Rangers said, not against
us.
Not
today.
Sorry. Elsewhere, the Maple Leafs, a 5-1 win over the Capitals. Canadiens, a 4-1 win over the Flyers. Senators blank the Blackhawks 2-0. Islanders, a 3-2 win over the Panthers. Penguins, 3-2 over the Blue Jackets. Hurricanes blank the Red Wings 4-0. Blues, a 5-3 win over the Flames. Wild, 3-1 over the Sharks. VGK, a 4-1 win over the Jets. Oilers, 4-1 over the Kings. Stars, 3-1 over the Canucks. Coyotes, an 8-4 win over the Predators. That's a lot of goals.
The Predators losing in that fashion.
I know.
Sheesh.
Got walloped. And then the Kraken, a 4-2 win over the Ducks. Here's what's on your schedule for tonight. Just one game. Devils at the Sabres, updating the Devils' playoff standings right now. They are at 76 points, but with the Islanders winning, they're now at 77. Detroit losing, so they're still at 79. And Washington losing, so they're still at 81. So two teams ahead of the Devils lost, which is good for them. But the Islanders winning does hurt them. But if New Jersey can pick up a win, they'll leapfrog the Islanders and get to 78 points after a game tonight. They are favorites tonight against the Buffalo Sabres on the road in Buffalo, Jersey, -120.
PBC on pay-per-view. Amazon is where you'll find it now. Showtime no more. So an easier way, if you've got, everybody's got Amazon.
Yeah.
So an easy way to check out the fights this weekend. And we've got a deep card. In fact, the Keith Thurman dropping out maybe loses a little star power. But man, I'll tell you what, when you see Tim Tszyu and Sebastian Fundora stand next to each other, you're going to be intrigued at how this fight could possibly go, with Fundora standing at 6'6", which, you know, sure, that's a big guy. How about at 154 pounds? How do you think that looks? Unbelievable difference in stature for these two. What are the odds as we sit here day before the fights?
Tim Tszyu, the champ, is a massive favorite at -575. Fundora on the comeback is +400. The total rounds is set at over under 7.5, with the over at -125.
Yeah, if I had a bet on this, my best bet would be the over 7.5 rounds.
You don't think there's a finish coming?
I think there could be a finish. I just don't think it'll be quick. Okay. And I think it's going to take – I think Tszyu wins. I think it's going to take him some time to solve this puzzle. You cannot really prepare.
His last fight against Mendoza, he went the distance.
Exactly. Yeah. We talked to both main event fighters.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear from Tim Tszyu. I asked him about what it was like to prepare for someone who has this kind of height and reach advantage. He addresses it there. But I think it takes him a little while to solve this puzzle. So my best bet will be over 7.5 rounds. Let's hear what we had to talk about with the two main event fighters, and we'll start with the challenger, Sebastian Fundora.
Joining us now, the man who is going to challenge on Saturday night, Sebastian Fondoro. It's crazy to see the difference in size between you two, but I'm sure that's something you've been used to your whole career, right?
Of course. We've fought guys actually shorter than him, so this is nothing new to me.
What does Tim bring to the table, in your opinion? What makes Tim what he is, and what makes him present a unique challenge?
He's a power puncher, he puts a lot of pressure, and he's an exciting fighter. So it's the reason why he's a world champion.
What was the biggest challenge for you about jumping in on late notice as a replacement?
The hardest thing was just saying yes, and that wasn't hard at all. I answered that in 2 seconds. But, this is a big opportunity for me. This is a main event in Las Vegas on a new platform for PBC. It's a big deal, you know, and this is how I become world champion.
Is it exciting for you to be the guy who, like, kicks off this era of pay-per-view boxing?
My dad's been telling me and my sister, because she's a world champion as well, this is the future of boxing. I'm going to be part of it. This is how I staple myself into it.
So I asked you about what Tim presents that makes him a difficult matchup. What do you think you bring that is going to be tough for him to handle?
I throw a lot of punches. I'm 6'6". I'm left-handed. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of qualities about me. You guys are going to have to tune in Saturday to see that.
When someone who's 6'6" and fighting at 154, taking a short notice fight, is cutting weight a difficult thing for you, getting down to the right weight quickly?
The thing about it is that's not a problem for me. That's why I can hold this weight for so long. A lot of people think I starve myself because I'm skinny. Yes, I'm skinny, but I think I'm skinny because I'm long. Other than that, yesterday I ate a burger. This is really my break right now, besides the fight, but this is, I'm enjoying myself. I'm in Vegas. Saturday night, of course, it's all worth, but we're ready.
When you hear the rumors that the winner of this fight might get a fight with Terrence Crawford, and it goes from being like, okay, I'm on the first pay-per-view, to that would be a mega fight, fighting Terrence Crawford, does that get you an extra little bit of buzz?
Of course. Right now, I'm focused on Tim Tsui right now. But in the future, Terrence Crawford, in my eyes, the pound-for-pound fighter in the whole world, if I can win off of that, where am I going to be at right there? You know, it's going to be big.
That's Sebastian Fondoro. You're going to hear him, or you're going to see him on the headliner of the pay-per-view this weekend. Sebastian, thank you. Best of luck, my friend.
Thank you.
Very calm demeanor from a guy who is stepping in the ring with a chance to win a title belt, AJ. He just seemed calm. Like, just, there's nothing that fazed him.
It is a very confident vibe to him.
Yeah.
Like, does not seem intimidated.
Yeah, he's tall.
He makes me feel short.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
Yeah, it's interesting to see a guy, and he, you know, talked about how he's skinny, but he's
got some muscle.
He really didn't look soft. Yeah.
He did not look thin. Like, he didn't look like a twig. Like, he's got muscle on.
There's some meat on those bones. Yeah. So he's got to have his hands full though against the unbeaten Aussie, Timothy Zhu.
All right, joining us now on the program, the headliner, the champ. See him on Saturday night on pay-per-view. Tim Tsui joins us on the program. Tim, how are you, man? How
very
you feeling?
Very well.
Now, this is it's like a new era, this Amazon era of pay-per-view. How does it feel to be the guy who's chosen to kick off this new age?
Because I am the new era, you know?
I love
like,
it.
29 years young, and there's a particular reason why I've come into this exact reason on Amazon Prime to headline the show.
Now, it's just your second fight in the States, and this is a much bigger arena, T-Mobile. I mean, this is where all the major fights here in the States are happening now. What does this stage mean to you?
Colosseum. Modern-day Colosseum, you know? My last trip, I was in Italy, and I saw the olden-day Colosseum, and it reminded me of the Warriors and stuff like that. So, yeah, modern-day Colosseum for
nice.
Me.
It seems like with Fondoro, we had him in here earlier. He seems very respectful. It's like a quiet confidence. You seem like you're carrying a quiet confidence. Is this your usual demeanor? Like, it feels like there's no bad blood or no beef. It just feels like this is business.
It is, you know, when you've got two fighters like this, it's going to be a good fight, you know. There's no bullshitting. There's no bullshitters. There's no acts. There's no comedians. It's just two real fighters.
How difficult was it, or was it difficult, to make the switch from preparing for Keith Thurman to now doing Fondoro with the replacement?
Look, it wasn't a bit of a change, but nothing that I've never not been aware of. You know, I'm ready for it anyway.
I mean, this guy is obviously just, from a height standpoint, reach standpoint, it's a massively awkward opponent. How in training have you like tried to emulate that, if you have?
Yeah, I've had I flew 6'5" down, bloke down from I forgot where it was, Michael J. Fox, and I was able to get some good work with him. He helped me out. He's quicker actually than Fandora, probably punches harder, so yeah, it was good to get rounds in with him.
Now this feels like the moment for you where you stop being Kostya's son and you become Timothy Zhu. Like, does it feel that way to you?
Nah,
like
that's changed a long time.
But it feels like you're becoming now a superstar as well.
Yeah,
so
I am.
We appreciate the time. Best of luck to you on Saturday. Yeah. I'm excited to see you in there. Thank you for your time.
Can't wait to watch.
See you, Tim. Good luck.
You.
We talk about confidence, AJ. I mean, that is a confident champion right there. Tim Zhu obviously was excited to face Keith Thurman and put together this fight. You know, Fandora now stepping in. It's going to be the super welterweight, WBO super welterweight title on the line, as well as the vacant WBC title on the line. And this guy's 17-0, and he carries himself like an undefeated champion.
He really does. And like you said, confidence is the word. He's oozing it. Like, it's, you could tell this guy doesn't feel like this is even going to be a test, but you can tell he's taking it very seriously. And that's a good place to be when you think you have no doubts that you're going to win, but you understand there's still a job to be done. That's a good mindset. Seems like he's definitely there.
Yep. PBC. It'll be Tsu Fandora. Also, Raleigh versus the Pitbull.
Oh, going to be a fantastic fight as well. And listen, we talked to Raleigh.
What a character.
Yeah,
what a showman.
We talked to him a little bit yesterday, and man, he is something else. But this is going to be a great fight. He's a very confident guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he's an underdog here. What are the odds currently?
He's minus 275 for Cruz. So Romero is a plus 215 dog.
Yeah, boy, Raleigh Romero was not carrying himself.
He did not carry
like
himself
a 215 dog.
When we told him the odds, oh boy, we thought we were going to get a reaction like he didn't like that, but he didn't care at all.
Yeah, I don't think he believed us.
Yeah, he didn't believe us, exactly. You can watch the fights on Amazon Prime Video pay-per-view, 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time, live from T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas.
One more guy we had a chance to talk to at Radio Row yesterday, and I think just his story deserves a little bit of shine. Not a boxer, but the lineage comes from boxing. One of the greatest boxer of all time, arguably, in Muhammad Ali. His grandson was at Radio Row. We had a chance to talk to Biagio Ali Walsh for a minute, a 1-0 MMA fighter.
Joining us over here at Radio Row for Zhu Fandora. Yeah. Is Biagio Ali Walsh. We were talking, we've got something in common, both being 1-0 professional undefeated MMA fighters. I feel good about that. You've probably got a brighter future though. Let's talk about that first pro fight. What was the difference for you? I mean, obviously being on the PFL amateur series is different than, you know,
sure,
fighting in bars, which I've certainly done.
Yeah.
But what was it like making that switch to the professionals, and especially on such a big stage?
Yeah, you know what's crazy is it wasn't too much of a switch, just because the PFL had given me an opportunity when I was an amateur. You know, my first fight was in Montana. It was a small organization. And then my second fight was in, like, a warehouse on a barn. And then, you know, the first fight with the PFL was at Madison Square Garden. So that's a pretty big jump, you know, especially when you're an amateur and it's only your third fight. So to go from, like, that second fight to the third fight was a big jump, you know, going from Utah to Madison Square Garden. It's a big jump, and I was still an amateur. So it wasn't too much of a difference. The only difference was that the rounds were longer. The PFL, you know, them giving me that opportunity definitely, I would say, prepared me to kind of what it's like to fight on that stage and in front of all those cameras and people, and it's on ESPN and all that stuff. So I think having five fights on that kind of stage before my first pro fight just prepared me for my first pro fight and the rest of my pro career.
And this one went the distance.
It went the distance,
as opposed to your previous. You had five straight stoppages.
Of course.
It was a little different experience, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I felt like it was kind of boring just because I out-wrestled the guy and stuff. But, you know, I went the distance. And, you know, going the distance really helps, too, with those nerves, because then you know, okay, I've been the distance before. I know what it feels like, especially just, like, kind of grappling a little bit the whole time. And, yeah, so I think everything's going just – the way it's supposed to, and everything's good, really.
What about the level of competition? Did you feel a difference? Like, in the pro fight, did you feel like, okay, this guy's better than some of the guys I've been fighting? Like, could you tell that?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously the competition is going to get just better and better. You know, the guy that I fought, he was a pro kickboxer. I wasn't pro nothing before MMA. So, yeah, definitely, you know, the competition is going to get better and better as I, you know, continue to fight. But, yeah, I'm just super excited for the journey, man. It's really something that I'm super grateful for, and yeah, it's super exciting.
Obviously, your lineage plays a big role in your story. You know, for those who don't know, your grandfather is the great Muhammad Ali. Do you get tired when people bring it up when it comes to your biography, or do you embrace the legacy? Do you want to kind of cement your own while still paying homage to your grandfather? Like, how does that balance for you?
Absolutely. You said it, the last point you just said, you know, I try to embrace it as much as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, if I were to get tired, then I'm going to be getting tired a lot, you know, so the entire time that I fight, I'm always going to be compared back to my grandfather. You know, if I even wasn't fighting, you know, when I was playing football, I was still being compared to my grandfather and great old, you know, Muhammad Ali's grandson was playing football. You know, if I was playing tennis, it'd be the same thing. You know, they'd still be talking about my grandfather. So I just embrace it as much as I can. You know, I would say more so because I'm in a combat sport. They're going to compare me. But, yeah, you know, at the same time, I'm trying to build my own name, my own legacy. I have my own fighting style. I'm not, you know, my grandfather, you know, he had a pretty face, you know, he liked to fight and move, and I'm the complete opposite. I like to walk dudes down and get hit and then throw my own. So, it's always going to happen, but, at the same time, I'm trying to make my own name.
Good attitude.
What drew you to MMA versus, I mean, obviously if you had gone the boxing path, I mean, the high end of boxing, we know there's more money than there is in MMA. And with your name, I'm sure you would have gotten a hell of a push as your brother has.
Of course.
I mean, what drew you to MMA instead of boxing?
Yeah, you know, I always was a fan of MMA. You know, I was definitely a boxing fan throughout my whole entire life. You know, my aunt fought. When we were, me and my brother were little kids, we'd always have fight nights and stuff. I was a big Manny Pacquiao fan. MMA, I became a fan like freshman year of high school, and I started watching a lot of like the UFC and just the sport in general. But when I was done playing football, one of my friends was training at Extreme Couture. He's like, hey, come, you know, still stay in shape, you know, because I wanted to stay in shape. I didn't want to not play football and just kind of get overweight. But so I went to Extreme Couture, started training, and I just fell in love with it. I love the idea that there's multiple martial arts that could play a part in a fight. So, and I like that. I like the grittiness of like it kind of being like a street fight. You know, I really like that. So, that's pretty much what drew me to MMA. Pretty much just that alone is what made me really love the sport.
Fun times there as we get ready for a fight weekend. I know you miss the UFC big cards, AJ, but you got enough college basketball and baseball to carry you right now.
Yeah, but I got news for you. UFC 300 right around the corner, baby. We're gonna be dealing for that one.
Well, I gotta ask you, because I've been so curious to know the answer and to know to really grill you a little further on this. Have you watched the Roadhouse remake yet?
I have watched the Roadhouse remake.
And your thoughts? Because I watched it too. And now I'm a fan of the original. I'm a Patrick Swayze 1980s fan. I love Youngblood, even though that was more about Rob Lowe, but still Swayze was the captain. So I love Youngblood, and Roadhouse doesn't get better. My favorite is like it's when he first gets hired and they have like the meeting and he's like firing everybody. Remember Swayze? Yeah. He's firing everybody. He comes in there. I don't know why I'm saying Swayze. When Swayze's firing everybody, so he comes in and he's like, you can go. And he's like, you can go too. No dealing in here. And then, like, the bartender, he's like, this guy's over-pouring. He's costing you $150 a night. You're out of here too. Like, he's just firing everybody.
It's like bar rescue.
Yeah. And the other guy's like, I'm going to kill you. He's the original. What's that guy's name? The bar rescue guy.
I don't know his name. That's what he is. Yeah.
But what'd you think of the remake?
First of all, I thought, aside from Jake Gyllenhaal, who I think did a pretty good job, it was a pretty poorly acted movie.
Yes.
It took a long time to get Conor McGregor involved, considering all the promotion made it seem like
he was there the
but
whole
doesn't
time.
Doesn't the movie just light up once he gets in there? He's a cartoon character.
He's so bad as an actor.
Cartoon character, but it's like good bad, if that makes sense.
I'll say this. It was a fun movie.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, check it out.
Look at what we have here.
Yeah. But
here's a bit of advice. Don't get too close.
Don't turn. It's worth a watch.
It's been a while since I've gone clubbing. It's so bad. It's so funny, though.
You know what? A lot of the corny lines, it does feel like the Leprechaun horror movie. You remember how the Leprechaun horror movie would say these terribly cheesy lines in the accent? That's what it felt like. But overall, it was a fun movie. It's worth a watch.
So the one part of the movie that really upset me a little bit, they made such a big deal when Jake Gyllenhaal filmed the UFC scene.
I was there.
At the fight, right? They made such a big deal out of it. They utilized the whole crowd. Like, they literally filmed Jake Gyllenhaal doing this UFC fight at an actual UFC fight.
Yeah. It was here in Vegas.
They showed 20 seconds.
They showed it in like 5 second bursts.
Five second bursts.
Yeah. But
so, I mean,
I think they filmed it all in case they needed it because Jake Gyllenhaal, when it happened, he did a full walkout.
Oh, like, yeah. I wanted to see that.
No, you didn't. Trust me, you didn't.
I wanted to see it. I wanted to see the fight.
As someone who sat through it, it felt like a gigantic waste of time. Right. So you didn't miss much. Well, you got the best of it.
I wanted to see it. All right. Here's what you can get the best of. The best discounts available at pregame.com. We got promo codes available for you. You can take $15 off any purchase of your choice. That could be a best bet package. It could just be a subscription, all access, whatever you'd like at pregame.com. Take $15 off using our promo code AM15. AM15 gets you $15 off anything at pregame.com. Use it this weekend and take advantage of the promos, the picks, everything we got up. Major League Baseball opening weekend, AM15. Get you $15 off at pregame.com. And if you're looking for all the sports betting content, and that includes free picks, highlights, viral videos, breaking news, you got to make sure to follow us on all the socials, X, TikTok, Instagram, Pregame Now is the social channel, at Pregame Now, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Pregame TV to get the latest videos as well. For AJ Hoffman, I'm Scott Seidenberg. We are Straight Out of Vegas AM.